In late November 2016, I was enjoying Thanksgiving break in my hometown on the Columbia River in Washington State when I received an unexpected call from Vice President-elect Pence. Would I meet with President-elect Trump to discuss the job of Secretary of Defense of the United States? I had taken no part in the election campaign and had never met or spoken to Mr. Trump. So to say that I was surprised is an understatement. Further, I knew that, absent a congressional waiver, federal law prohibited a former military officer from serving as Secretary of Defense within 7 years of departing military service. I had time on the cross-country flight to ponder how to encapsulate my view of America's role in the world. My flight out of Denver, the flight attendant's standard safety briefing caught my attention. If cabin pressure is lost, masks will drop. Put your own mask on first, then help others around you. We've all heard it many times. But in that moment, these familiar words seemed like a metaphor. To preserve our leadership role, we needed to get our own country's act together first, especially if we were to help others. This book is about how my career in the Marines brought me to this moment and prepared me to say yes to a job of this magnitude. The Marines teach you, above all, how to adapt, improvise, and overcome. But they expect you to have done your homework, to have mastered your profession. Amateur performance is anathema, and the Marines are bluntly critical of falling short, satisfied only with 100% effort and commitment. Yet over the course of my career, every time I made a mistake, and I made many, the Marines promoted me. They recognized that those mistakes were part of my tuition and a necessary bridge to learning how to do things right. Year in and year out, the Marines had trained me in skills they knew I needed while educating me to deal with the unexpected. That's from the opening of Call Sign Chaos, Learning to Lead by Jim Mattis and Bing West. And I'll note up front that no disrespect to the general, it's on the cover, Jim Mattis. It's a book that war buffs and biography aficionados both will delight in reading. And it's a book in which the newly inaugurated President Trump at first exalted Mad Dog Mattis's gruff personality comes through on every page. But it's not only a gruff personality that is highlighted on page after page of Call Sign Chaos. It's the story of a thoughtful, patriotic, and insightful man that comes across here, too. As Publishers Weekly noted so succinctly, quote, Mattis divides his book into three parts, direct leadership, executive leadership, and strategic leadership. In the first part, direct leadership, Mattis recalls his early experiences leading Marines into battle when he knew his troops as well as his own brothers. In the second part, executive leadership, he explores what it means to command thousands of troops and how to adapt your leadership style to ensure your intent is understood by your most junior troops so that they can own their mission. In the third part, strategic leadership, Mattis describes the challenges and techniques of leadership at the strategic level, where military leaders reconcile war's grim realities with political leaders' human aspirations. This, then, is the story of Jim Mattis' career as a Marine, from his first enlistment through his years fighting and leading troops in the first Gulf War in 1990, helping to lead the invasion of Afghanistan in the wake of 9/11, and then, as well, helping lead the invasion of Iraq soon after. The book nears its conclusion with Mattis's taking on the leadership of U.S. Central Command from General David Petraeus in 2010, a leadership career spanning four presidential administrations and touching briefly on a fifth. Finally ends as he is on the cusp of accepting the offer to run the nation's Defense Department at the invitation of the newly elected president. I concur with Kirkus Magazine, which wrote, quote, considered an intellectual, Mattis insists foremost on lifelong learning and constant reading. When he was called on to lead the 1st Marine Division in the Iraq War, for instance, he devoured books from T.E. Lawrence's Seven Pillars of Wisdom quote, few Westerners in recent history had achieved his level of trust with Arabs on the battlefield, end quote. To memoirs and studies of William Tecumseh Sherman, Gertrude Bell, and Alexander the Great. Quote, I may not have come up with many new ideas, writes Mattis, but I've adopted or integrated a lot from others, end quote. And he insisted that his officers and enlisted personnel read and study. Mattis highlights his leadership skills, which he tells us he was constantly honing, and thus the subtitle, Learning to Lead, as we re-engage with the Iraqi invasion by U.S. and coalition troops in much of this memoir, and see through the then General Mattis's eyes how the civilian regime installed by President Bush messed up, in Mattis's opinion, a promising situation. Not the first person to offer this commentary, Mattis's views are perhaps the more vital for his being on the ground at the time all of this went down. Not one to pull his punches, as I noted at the outset, Mattis paints himself and his officers and the enlisted Marines he led as working for a larger, common good during that Iraqi invasion. He praises his fellow British officers at the time as urging the Allies to liberate, not dominate, the newly conquered Iraqi army and the civilians over whom they were to come to rule. As he writes, we did not push our way around. I believe the environment in my zone provided a basis for building sound local governance structure. Still, we received no helpful guidance from above. President Bush had appointed former Ambassador Paul Bremer as his presidential envoy and director of what came to be called the Coalition Provisional Authority, making him the most powerful American in Iraq. Bremer and his large CPA staff worked in a palace alongside Army Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez and his staff. Sanchez commanded the Joint Task Force 7, which included all coalition military units in Iraq. JTF 7 was responsible for security. However, the CPA remained the authority and funder to design and organize a new democratic government in this complex managerial environment. Bremer and his CPA played a key role in all dimensions. At the same time, we Marines were working with the remnants of the Iraqi army, excluding only those openly hostile to us or with innocent Iraqi blood on their hands. Over coffee, I hosted former Iraqi generals and elicited their views about reestablishing their army alongside us. Take your pick, sir, one of my officers said. Military, police, engineers, infantry, even a commando company. You name it, and I can have it ready to deploy in 3 days. Every Iraqi soldier here wants to be put back to work. It was not to be. Without consulting our military commanders in the field, Ambassador Bremer disbanded the Iraqi army and banned most members of the Ba'ath Party from government positions. Under Saddam, technocrats had kept their jobs by belonging to the party. We could have weeded out the oppressors and diehard Ba'athists without slicing off the sinews of governance, public service, and security. Demobilizing the Iraqi army ahead of depoliticizing it set the most capable group of men in the country on an adversarial course against us. This is not the first or the last time, he writes about how civilian leadership far away in Washington, D.C., or even closer up, if you will, in Baghdad, messed up what the military and other civilians had accomplished on the ground. Those distant commanders were ignorant of the reality on the ground, and worse, it is implied if not stated, those distant commanders had no interest in hearing from Mattis and others who did have knowledge from the field. Perhaps nowhere did this meddling from a distance have more devastating effects on the civilian population of Iraq than in the major assault U.S. and allied troops carried out against terrorists infesting the Iraqi city of Fallujah. Mattis had recommended a take-our-time approach to rooting out the terrorists who were interwoven into the city. Instead, the civilian command in Baghdad, with the okay of the U.S. president, he infers, wanted a full-on assault of this major Iraqi population center, though Mattis had cautioned the loss of human life, and especially civilian life, would be huge, since his Marines would be attacking a city full of civilians, with terrorists mixed in among the larger population. Good soldier that he was, and is, Mattis swallows his objections, salutes his ultimate commanding officers, and takes up the ultimately gruesome military task. He tells us that story a little bit later in the book. And lest you wonder if his criticisms are aimed only at Republican presidents, let me assure you that the general spends ample time sharing his criticisms aimed at President Obama and his administration as well, ultimately leading to Mattis's resignation due to significant policy differences with the Obama administration. All of this does urge a reader to ask, urge me to ask, why stay in the fight? Why put up with what the general saw and experienced in real time as incompetent civilian leadership? Why not just resign and enter civilian life himself? Or perhaps even enter politics and have a civilian's opportunity to criticize the decisions being taken? Well, in part, Mattis tells us it's because he's a good soldier, and a good soldier does as he is told. And he provides this anecdote, which I think says a lot about his philosophy towards the military, towards the government, and towards the United States as a whole. Toward the end of a battle in 2010, he writes, I encountered a Marine and a Navy Corpsman, both sopping wet, having just cooled off by relaxing in an adjacent irrigation ditch. I gave them my usual. How's it going, young men? Living the dream, sir, the Marine shouted. No Maserati, no problem, the soldier added with a smile. Their nonchalance and good cheer, even as they lived one day at a time under austere conditions, reminded me how unimportant are many of the things back home that can divide us if we let them. I believe that I and all Americans, Mattis writes, need to recognize that our democracy is an experiment and one that can be reversed. I'm all for vigorous debate and vociferous disagreements, grounded in consistent democratic principles and mutual respect. I've developed a love affair with our Constitution. Its purpose, as stated in the preamble, includes, quote, to ensure domestic tranquility and promote the general welfare, end quote. We all know that we're better than our current politics. Tribalism need not disrupt our experiment. General Mattis wraps up his thoughtful and straight-to-the-point look at his life and his career with an urgent recommendation that the U.S. remember it is of critical importance that our nation not work alone, but with allied nations. Well, he tells us up front in his preface that this is not about his career as Secretary of Defense in the Trump administration. It is difficult not to read this penultimate chapter as anything else. In early chapters, as I noted, Mattis finds fault with the leadership, or lack thereof, provided by Presidents Bush and Obama. This penultimate chapter is perhaps his attempt to criticize the current president without naming him. As he writes, I've had the privilege to fight for our country in many places. Not once did I fight in a solely American formation. I fought repeatedly along allies and partners. It should be a source of pride for all Americans that if we have an empire, it has been an empire of ideas and ideals, sufficient to draw many like-minded nations to our side. The World War II generation is referred to as our greatest generation because they defeated fascism. And it had it seared into them that while they may not like everything that happens beyond our borders, our freedom is inextricably tied to the global situation. They then acted to secure a better peace. In the end, Mattis is a proud soldier and, even more, a proud American. He urges us to be the same. And I can think of no better way to end this review than with his own words. Few among our citizenry choose to be warriors. They are our thin red line. No policymaker should ever send them into battle until he has assessed the risks and costs and is reasonably confident of achieving a clear goal. I believe, writes Mattis, that we can get over our current malaise of tribalism. On every coin we've imprinted E pluribus unum, out of many, one. That was the motto our forefathers adopted to avoid becoming a nation of immigrants divided into tribes. For the sake of future generations, let us keep the faith. E pluribus unum. It's quite an interesting book, whether you're interested, as I said, in leadership, certainly, but biography, military affairs, or just somebody who tells it like he thinks it is. Call Sign Chaos, Learning to Lead by Jim Mattis and Bing West. It's available at all of our fine local libraries, including the West Lafayette Public Library.